Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by Alex Brown for another episode of Wiretaps. How are things going, Alex?
Very good, Graham. Good to be back.
Yeah, so I know that our listeners, at least those in the U.S. or those who may be American, are probably still coming out of their food coma post-Thanksgiving, but we hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. And here we are, Monday, December 2nd, and there's kind of a lot going on. Do you want to walk us through why this is kind of a busy week on the MBA admissions front?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this upcoming week is the first week of sort of what we call decision weeks, where a lot of the top schools from this week forward up through to sort of December 20th will be releasing their round one decisions. So we'll see a lot of activity on Livewire over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And this upcoming week, we should be hearing from candidates from Yale, and from Chicago, amongst other schools. So two big schools scheduled to release decisions this week. Also ISC and actually Rice-Jones, although we've seen some already seen some admits on Livewire for Rice-Jones. So they're obviously sending out some of their decisions early.
Yeah, and the tricky part about this is that, you know, there are those schools who kind of say, here's the date, we're going to release decisions, and they literally do nothing until that date. And then there are other schools that decide, you know, in the days leading up to the decision day, they start calling people to congratulate. So it really is a mixed bag, but we're going to see two, as you say, two big schools come off the board this week with Chicago and Yale. And that's going to be, we're going to be off to the races after that with all the other top MBA programs in the world getting decisions out as we head into the holidays. So it's going to be busy. And remember, everyone, it's always great for us if you can share your results on Livewire, help other people in the community sort of see what's happening, and also use the chat rooms. We have chat rooms set up for each and every leading MBA program, and you can kind of find fellow applicants and commiserate there while you're waiting for news. The only other thing that I guess I wanted to mention other than, you know, the Thanksgiving holiday last week was that Kellogg announced that they are getting into the STEM certification game, you know, right on the heels of Berkeley announcing that all their MBA programs are STEM. Kellogg came out with an announcement indicating that one specific pathway in their MBA program, which is a major in management science, is going to be STEM eligible. And again, for those listeners who weren't with us last week, it just means that if you're a non-US citizen, and you've come to study at Kellogg from abroad or whatever, you can stay in the U.S. and you have working privileges for 3 years instead of the usual one. And, you know, this major management science, it could, you know, it doesn't necessarily sound like hardcore quant, which is usually what's required for STEM, but apparently the way that they're applying it is, you know, it's going to be all about the application of analytical techniques and tools and models across the school's, you know, academic disciplines, according to Kellogg. So, again, as we said last week, we think that more and more schools are going to follow suit here and get in on STEM certification or eligibility so that, you know, obviously they can be more attractive to international students. Beyond that, we did run a really fun Real Humans of MIT Sloan. Encourage people to check that out. We also did an interview with the admissions director at IMD in Switzerland, a very small business school that is a top school in Europe that some of our listeners are certainly familiar with. But other than that, Alex, you've picked out a handful of ApplyWire entries that we're going to break down in our usual kind of Wiretaps format here. So let's dive in, unless there's anything else that you wanted to add before we do so.
No, I think it's time to get going, Graham.
All right, so let's look at Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is looking to start next fall, has had a career in entrepreneurship, which we'll delve into, pretty interesting stuff. They want to work in VC, venture capital, after business school, and they've listed Charles River, First Round Capital, Sequoia Capital as some potential targets. GMAT score off the charts, 770, and a GPA kind of off the charts too, but in the other direction, 2.43. Years of work experience, 7, and this person's located in Boston. And, you know, they did mention in their note, they gave us a ton of information, really helpful post here. And they mentioned that this is actually the fourth season that they're applying to MBA programs. And so they're, you know, hoping we can shed some light, maybe give them, you know, some information that'll help them get to the finish line this time around. I should mention also that they have some results already, right? So they have already applied in round one to Tuck, CMU, Johnson and Stern. They were rejected at Stern without an interview, and they think maybe that's because they didn't get to the campus. And I guess they were waitlisted at Cornell, and they had interviews at both Tepper and Tuck. So that's where things stand, and they're trying to figure out a round two strategy. They gave us a lot of other info, particularly about their entrepreneurial background. But Alex, what's your take on this candidate? I mean, clearly these kind of polarizing academic numbers are what jump out at me.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, you say this candidate wants to start school this upcoming fall. This candidate's wanted to start school for the last 4 years, Graham. So it's been a very tough struggle, I think, for this candidate, given the diverse sort of numbers that he presents. On the one hand, there's absolutely no doubt that this candidate's super smart. You don't get a 770 GMAT without being super, super smart. So, you know, he's got to really address this 243 GPA and really show admissions committees that he's academically motivated and he plans and wants to do well. And he's done some stuff in that direction. He's taken some additional coursework, gotten straight A's. And so from that perspective, that was a good thing to do, I think. And it strikes me that the entrepreneurial experience that the candidate has is strong. I mean, they've done entrepreneurship in two industries, media and entertainment, the first go around, and then they've done some. They're now currently in the healthcare field, and it looks like they're planning to. You know, he's done some fun, you know, rounds of raising funds, looking potentially to sell that business before heading into business school, and so forth. So I'm guessing this person has some terrific experiences to articulate in the application. I'm guessing the candidate is from Asia and is living currently in the United States. I think South Korean, but I don't think he explicitly expresses that. But nevertheless, there's a lot to like here, but it's a complicated story for this candidate to address, and it's all tied to this 2.43 GPA. So that's clearly what's you know, the struggle. The candidate also expresses some rationale for the GPA. It says there was a family crisis or a family tragedy, sorry, and didn't want to go into any detail regarding that family tragedy, which is absolutely understandable. What I would say is in the applications, in that optional essay, he will have to address this issue. And while he might not want to go into the detail of the family tragedy, he's going to have to convince the admissions committee that if a similar tragedy reoccurs, he would act differently and wouldn't clearly just tune out and do poorly, which is the case this time. So what has he learned from that experience? A dreadful experience, no doubt. And how would he respond more recently is definitely something he does have to address, I think, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This is the linchpin of the candidacy, right? I mean, it's and also, you know, sadly, now that it's kind of 4 years in, he's getting older too, right? So that makes him, it's just a little more of a challenge. I mean, he's not out of the ball, out of the kind of range at all yet, but I will say, look, the guy's done everything you possibly could want, right? 770 GMAT. He took these three courses in accounting, finance, and microeconomics, all straight A's. So I think he's sending the right signals, but I absolutely agree. The optional essay needs to explain. I understand he doesn't want to tell us, you know, what the tragedy was on a public, you know, website, but ideally in the application, he would explain this. And, you know, if it's the loss of a relative or, you know, something horrible that happened, whatever it is, explain it, explain why he reacted the way he reacted and how he's learned from that. I mean, obviously, if it's one of these like once in a lifetime horrible things that happens, I'm not as concerned that they might say, well, what if this happens again? But I think you're right. He's got to show that there was like some learning from this and that he, has put his mind to do, you know, better performance going forward. You know, he's really hit the ball out of the park on the GMAT. He's taken these classes. So I really, I agree with you. This person seems interesting and incredibly driven, at least now. You know, yes, they dropped, practically dropped out of school, were on probation, but that's a while ago at this point. And yeah, hopefully one of these programs will take a flyer on this candidate, because as you say, he's led his current company through every phase of, you know, business planning, financing, bringing product to market kind of stuff. And it sounds like he's had a, you know, a lot of good experience. The one thing I will say, and I'm kind of curious, I really wanted to get your take on this. What do you think of his career goals? Because when I see someone with a kind of non-traditional background, you know, low GPA and applying to schools that are great schools, but not typical VC feeder schools, I sort of get nervous about whether this person's going to actually be able to land the type of job that they're, you know, kind of implying with a VC fund. Because those jobs, we know, often go to like either really successful entrepreneurs or people that have, you know, had kind of senior roles within kind of investment banking or something. So I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of curious to hear your take on this. Yeah. So is that something that's jumping out at you, or you think the goals are fine?
Yeah, I think that that's a very interesting question, Graham. And I think, as we know, going into VC is very difficult. It's going to be based on, I think, some of his own networks, right? And some of his own experiences and the networks he's built through the current experience with the healthcare entrepreneurial venture, I would assume, right?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wonder if a more compelling story would be one in which, you know, I mean, he's clearly learned a lot about healthcare. He's playing in that domain now. I mean, maybe, you know, he's talking about selling his company to a larger firm that might absorb it. And I'm kind of like, well, maybe your goal should be to go work for a slightly larger, you know, healthcare company where you can do kind of, you know, new product launches or something that would just dovetail more with what he's done to date. Because my view is that a school is going to be taking a risk on his GPA. You know, they're going to be taking a hit to their class profile, and they're going to be saying, gee, you know, this guy went off the rails in undergrad and we don't want that to happen again. So we're taking that risk. But then if there's a double risk on the side of, wait, he wants to work for Sequoia Capital, and like we never really send anyone there, and even Harvard and Stanford and Wharton only send a tiny number of people to these firms, like that creates a second risk. And so I was just thinking, like, maybe there's a way for him to mitigate that. Obviously, he's already applied for the first batch, but it sounds like, you know, he may be doing some round two applications. So that's the only other feedback that I would have for him.
Again, I think that is a really good point. And if, you know, he can't network his way into venture capital with his own networks, then I think your point is far more critical in terms of being smart about those goals, being realistic about those goals, while still being ambitious. That's important. And again, this guy does seem like there's a lot of potential upside if he can get over the hump of the undergraduate GPA. And it's also interesting, in all of his application struggles, his 4 years as a reapplicant now, he has received interview invites at the likes of Sloan, I think he said, and other M7. So, I wouldn't discourage this guy, if he gets all his ducks in a row, to throw in a couple of apps back into the M7. He didn't get an invite at Stern. That does not mean you're not going to get an invite at an M7. I mean, these things, if he's gone to visit, he understands the fit, and so on and so forth, there's a possibility, right?
Yeah, and the only other thing I would say, and I mentioned this to you before we came on air here, is that I did wonder whether, you know, the fact that he's interviewed before at some of these schools and, you know, has been striking out all the same, it makes me wonder how good of a job he's done at kind of expressing this very non-traditional, somewhat tumultuous path that he's been on. And so I wonder, it sounds like he mentioned he's working with a consultant and stuff. So hopefully he's doing some, what, you know, kind of mock interviewing and really prepping in that domain too, because it's tough. I mean, he's got a complicated story, but he still needs to be able to articulate it in a concise way. So that's my two cents. Anything else on this one, or should we move on to the next candidate?
I think we should just move on, but I really wish this candidate the best of luck. Schools do like the tenacity of a candidate that comes back and that come back and reapply.
Yes, agreed.
They don't often see someone that's reapplying for a fourth season. So that's tenacity on steroids, and I wish the candidate the best of luck. There's definitely, in my mind, a place in a top school for a candidate like this if they execute well on those applications.
Agree. Absolutely. So best of luck to that person. Let's move on and discuss Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person has been working in Shanghai, China. She is a senior commercial specialist with a kind of, it sounds like a German family business. She gives us some details there. And she wants to move into kind of either consulting, banking, or consumer goods. So kind of really run of the spread there. And then companies are Bain, McKinsey, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley. GMAT score 740, GPA 3.47. 4 years of work experience by the time she matriculates. And she mentions she's female and Chinese, has currently, you know, has worked for 3 years so far. And so it'll be four by the time she goes. And it sounds like she's moved around. She had a couple of different jobs. I think she's in her third role now, and is kind of wondering about the timing of like when she should apply. Schools that she's targeting are Cambridge, Columbia, Cornell, Duke, HEC, INSEAD, London Business School, and Michigan. So, Alex, you had some dialogue with this candidate, and you, I think your first question to her was, well, wait, is it consulting, banking, or consumer goods? So, yeah, what's your take on her?
Yeah, I mean, candidates really need to know what their goals are in their application. You can get great candidates in applying to top schools. If their goals aren't focused, they don't get admitted, regardless of, you know, everything else being super strong. So just make sure as a candidate that the goal focus is well developed. Again, ambitious, but realistic based on your background and your experiences and so forth. You also neglected, sorry, Graham, to mention she's got a two-year-old baby. And she was blind when she applied. When she left college, which struck me as an odd comment. But what she meant was not literally blind, but was naive, I guess is the right term, in terms of her first career choice.
Yeah, she just kind of randomly ended up at a Fortune 500 company. And she said that the job was tedious and didn't require much thinking. So she switched her career to data analysis and started working in that domain. So I think that the key question here is, yeah, what is she going to do with her career path? And, you know, she did elaborate a bit because she did say, after you kind of questioned her on this, she said, you know, well, I want to be a consultant after business school, but I'm considering banking too. And so my view would be, you know, no school holds you to what you say in the essays in terms of your goals, but I think they're hoping that you pick your best kind of guess at what you want to do. And I think it sounds like it's consulting in her case. And, you know, ideally, you know, maybe she can be more specific about that even in terms of what type of consulting might interest her the most, or if there are industries she's had exposure to because of her work to date. But you mentioned to me that you're kind of wondering about the timing of her applications because of her moving around so much with jobs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, her personal circumstances may be dictating why she wants to go to business school this year. As again, she has a two-year-old kid, and you know, see, that may be some part of the reason why she thinks business school is the right time now. If that's not the case, the thing that troubles me a little bit is she's been in three roles, three different companies, I think, over a 3 or 4 year period. She also took a break to study for the GMAT and to prepare for business school. So after two roles, she decided she wanted to go to business school, took some time off, took the GMAT, did very well, so kudos for that, and has now started another role, which she seems to enjoy and be doing well in, but she's only been at it for a couple of months. So if she's planning then to leave this role after, say, 6 months to go to business school, I think that's going to be a little bit tricky. I mean, identifying recommenders to support her case, justifying why now is the right time, that she's learned from these roles and developed and grown. Whereas if she stays in this current role, which she says that she's enjoying and she feels that she's more sort of impactful and so forth, the additional year might really help this candidate develop into a very strong candidate, Graham. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I recognize, and I think admissions committees recognize that women can face fairly unique, you know, challenges in terms of kind of mapping the sort of family stuff and the career stuff that a lot of guys don't have to deal with, although I think guys should have to deal with it more than they do. But in any event, so she has, maybe there is something, you know, like you're saying, like maybe the fact that her child is now two, she, you know, it's the right time for her to be able to kind of, you know, deal with both kind of caring for a child and getting an MBA. And that might be even a better thing than being in a kind of full-time job or something. But one thing, though, I will say, she did mention that it sounds like she wants to be, you know, in either the UK or the US and in either London or New York, basically. And it also sounded like she was suggesting her child might stay back home with her parents. So there are a lot of moving parts here. But to your question, I agree that if her kind of personal situation allows for it, it might behoove her to stay in this role just a little longer and apply for the next cycle. Because, yeah, I think it could be challenging to get impressive recommendations and everything else she's going to need. I mean, I am impressed with her, you know, test scores and her, you know, her grades and even her written English it's solid. I mean, you know, it's, you know, because those are concerns that people will have for candidates coming from China and stuff. So I think she ticks the boxes. But I mean, I guess one thing she could do is give it a shot in round two and see where the chips fall. And then, as you were saying with the earlier candidate today, like if someone reapplies, it's not like your odds go down, actually. They usually come up. So she could try. But I do agree that she's got to work on her career plan. And, you know, it just, I think it would be great if she had some more experience in this current role.
Yeah. I mean, I think quite frankly, Graham, she is an example of a candidate who, with another year, is likely to get opportunities at a slightly higher level of school than the opportunities she'd likely get this year. So whether it's this year she can get into top 16 school or an M7, if that's the case, then I'd say, well, next year it could be top 3 M7.
Agree.
If you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a good chance that if she were to apply to some of these schools on her list this year, she'll get in. I mean, it's possible, right? I think she'll need, you know, the recommendations have to be strong. She'll have to have great essays and solidify her career plan. But she could get into some of the schools on this list. But I agree that it's almost like, yeah, if she stays that extra year and expands her leadership responsibility or just faces some unique challenges and things, yeah, the doors start to open up to schools that are north of this. I will say, I mean, it sounds like she wants to be in London and New York, but then she has some schools on the list, as I mentioned, you know, Duke, Michigan, that are not really near they're not near those markets, or they're not, certainly not that close. Although I guess if you're coming all the way from Shanghai, you know, then maybe, you know, the few hour flight from Michigan to New York City maybe seems like nothing. So, but I will say that, you know, there are some other schools that are pretty close to New York, like Wharton or Harvard, or, you know, that could become viable options if, you know, she can get some good experience. And I mean, I also think she probably has an interesting story to tell with raising a child and, you know, at a fairly young age and all that stuff. So again, great candidate.
Yeah, but she is frank. She says, I don't make any decisions at work. So, right, you know, right now she's in a clear support role, which is not unusual, but get that extra year in, take on some, you know, initiatives, go to your boss, tell them that you really want to be challenged and so on and so forth. And that could really set this candidate up. But that all said, there's probably opportunities this year, but I just don't think they'd be as good as opportunities as she would have in another year or so.
Yeah, agreed. But definitely focus on those goals, get the essays together, make sure the recs are strong, whether you're applying, you know, this year or next year, I would say to her. So, all right, anything else on her before we move on to our final Wiretaps candidate for the week?
No, I think that was good, Graham.
All right. All right, so Wiretaps candidate number 3. So this person doesn't want to start until the fall of 2021, so they have a little bit of time, and they're currently working in aviation international marketing strategy, and post-MBA, hoping to get into consulting or tech or even pharmaceutical, and they list Bain, BCG, McKinsey, and Takeda. They have a GMAT score of 760, a GPA of 3.8, 3 years of work experience at present. They want to end up in kind of the Asia Pacific, maybe even Singapore region post-MBA, and they're looking at Cambridge, Harvard, INSEAD, LBS, Stanford, and Chicago. They also mentioned that, I guess they're currently working for a Fortune 100 firm, and they're hoping to kind of use business school to transition over to, you know, MBB, ideally an Asia Pacific post. They are a first generation college student, Asian American. They also have a kind of interesting thing. They minored in Arabic and tutored English in Morocco as part of study abroad. So kind of an interesting angle there. And, you know, they've got some extracurriculars, speak some different languages, including English, Mandarin, and they're learning Japanese. So there's a lot going on here. As of now, they would only have 3 years of experience by the time of, by the time of admission. I wonder if that means by the time they would start school, probably, right? So anyway, they're a little concerned about this age kind of work experience since they're on the younger side. So what do you think about this candidate?
This candidate's potential superstar, Graham. You know, the numbers say so. Obviously, we're not too familiar with the impact that the candidates had at their work, but assuming they've had high impact or at least sort of are on that trajectory, I think there's some great possibilities here for this candidate going forward. Some lots of interesting stuff, whether it be first generation college student, minoring in Arabic, doing stuff in Morocco, setting up a sort of non-profit startup in college on microfinance, speaking English, Mandarin fluently, learning Japanese. I mean, it's like, there's a lot of stuff to like. You could just imagine that the, you know, MBB shops are going to love a candidate like this. So, you know, frankly, Graham, I think this candidate's really, really interesting. What struck me a little bit was, you know, why wasn't Wharton on the list?
Yeah, or just why is there not a... Yeah, I mean, because they talk about healthcare.
Yeah, this healthcare passion or theme that they have that's not present in their current work experience, as far as I'm aware. So that's going to be an interesting, not struggle, but an interesting challenge for the candidate to articulate the rationale for their professional goals. I think they did something in healthcare early in their life to sort of get interest in that, but hadn't pursued it so much recently. That's right. Sorry. So they studied STEM bio at Harvard for a summer, which is like, well, that's cool. But then they went on off into this sort of aviation industry or whatever it might be. So the candidate's going to make a good case for coming back into healthcare, which I think is very good. They could do that, but understanding that that's not a trivial exercise. Making sure that they know the schools that are players in that field, right? So Wharton was just not on their list, and I questioned them on that. And you know, they said, well, I think Wharton's a bit similar to Booth. And I was like, well, you know what? Wharton's quite renowned for its healthcare programs, and now they're looking into it. So it just makes me wonder the level of research the candidate's done for the list of these programs.
Right. This looks to me more like a list of, you know, obviously they mentioned they want to be in Asia Pacific or Singapore. And so they went and picked schools. Well, obviously INSEAD with the campus in Singapore, LBS and Cambridge being two other really, you know, well-known and also kind of world-renowned kind of, you know, university reputation type thing, which plays well in Asia. And then obviously they have Harvard and Stanford. So that it all makes sense from a kind of prestige standpoint and maybe a rankings standpoint. But if you start to think about healthcare, yeah, my thought is, you know, actually there's, you know, there are obviously some life science and biotech things happening in the Cambridge area. But then when you look at the US market, I think you're right. I mean, Wharton, Duke, Kellogg, those are the three schools that come to mind very quickly when it comes to healthcare related stuff. And obviously HBS has this really interesting joint degree that they're launching that's, I guess, the now accepting applications for, and it'll start next fall. We actually did a whole podcast about it. And it's like basically an MBA and a MS in biotech life sciences. So, I mean, I don't know what this person, they mentioned that they already did study at Harvard and it sounded like it maybe didn't go that well. They didn't have the grit, they said, for chemistry, or the gift, sorry, for chemistry. So I kind of wondered, you know, does that mean they didn't do well or what happened there? But they are interested in it from an investment perspective. So, you know, maybe that doesn't merit an entire second, you know, kind of dual degree in life science or biotech or something. But I just would encourage them to, as you say, do their homework. This is clearly a gifted candidate, great numbers. I did wonder, do they have nationality to work back in Asia Pacific? Just because it sounds like they're Asian American. And I just wondered, you know, because when you go to interview and you're telling McKinsey or whoever it is that you want to work in the Singapore office or wherever it might be, it helps if you have citizenship and they can just place you there. It's obviously a much harder push if they would have to get you working papers. It's not as easy depending on the market and stuff. But so I just want to mention that too. And I think, yeah, the other than that, I mean, I guess they're just going to need to figure out how do they weave this kind of career narrative together, because they've so far been in this kind of aviation space, and how are they going to convince, how are they going to convince the committee, because even their outside activities, whether it's tutoring English in Morocco or nonprofit consulting project with Boys and Girls Club and United Way, like there's nothing in there that suggests healthcare. So I would want to have a conversation with this person about what makes most sense goals wise.
And quite frankly, Graham, that's kind of why I chose this candidate, because I mean, the numbers are spectacular. And no doubt what this candidate has done, again, we don't really know much about the work experience itself, but other stuff that the candidate's done is pretty interesting and amazing stuff. But there's very little that suggests healthcare, other than that short time at Harvard. But that's sort of the goals that they have. I don't want them to change goals if those truly are the goals, but making sure that they recognize that they need to sort of articulate it effectively and show how their experiences to date are going to help set them up for what they plan to do, and so on and so forth. And maybe we also need to know, why did they choose the aviation industry, given that at that stage, I'm sure they had a passion for the healthcare industry, you know, because they'd probably already been to Harvard for whatever it was. So, it's just a case of being very thorough about making sure that they explain themselves effectively. And they have another year, I think. That's right, right? They're waiting a little bit before they're applying?
Yeah, they're going to apply next fall to start the following. So they have some time. I will say, I thought it was interesting to hear someone say that they didn't think Wharton was really differentiated at all from Chicago. I mean, two fantastic schools. Obviously, you and I, having both been employees over at Wharton, were biased. But I just thought that was interesting, because I think of the schools as being both, M7 top schools, but they're different to me. I mean, obviously, you know, their locations are different. Penn is Ivy League. Chicago is just a large university that's, you know, not part of the Ivy League. Like, they're just different. And I think when you think about healthcare in particular, the big healthcare markets in the U.S. are kind of, you know, in and around Philadelphia, New Jersey, and then up in Boston. And then maybe there's, you know, obviously some things happening out on the West Coast. So it's just interesting. I encourage this person to just do more digging based on their goals. That'll help, especially since they have the time to do it. So thanks for picking these three candidates out, as always.
Yeah, I mean, again, Graham, three candidates with super strong GMATs. That wasn't the reason why I picked them. But the reality is, despite having super strong GMATs, each of them faces some different challenges in the application. So it's not just a question of, I got a great GMAT, therefore I can go to a great school. There are different challenges that each of these candidates will face. The first candidate we know is the undergraduate GPA, and showing that's a long way in his past and focusing on the entrepreneurship. For the second candidate, is having a good work track record and building and developing from that. And this candidate, it's about sort of, you know, making sure the goals, the passion, the interests going forward are aligned to some extent with past experience and don't just sort of come out of left field somewhere.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully our advice reaches their ears and they can take steps to, you know, put their best foot forward. So let's wish them the best of luck. And Alex, we'll be back next week. Obviously, we're not taking any breaks here for, you know, the holidays and such. We want to keep these episodes coming out. So stay tuned. There are some additional episodes that I've recorded with some admissions folks and people from different leading schools that are forthcoming. And as I mentioned on the last episode, we're really working to bring a kind of Real Humans podcast together where we're going to talk with students at some of these schools. So stay tuned for that. Alex, thanks once again for all your effort on this. Always good to chat about these candidates and go back and forth on what the right strategy is. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, and I wish these candidates the best of luck. And everybody, hope you all had a great Thanksgiving for those of you in that part of the world. And look forward to another week of Wiretaps.